The following program contains heavy spoilers, deep insight, and absolutely no filters. Listener discretion is advised. And with that, Snobs on Film, my name is Arthur, joined by my usual suspects, Isaac Perry and Jahan, first of his name. One of my favorite genres is a spy movie. I love a good spy movie. But as of late, they're more infrequent than I'd want them to be. Or, you know, and sometimes, to be frank, they just manifested a little bit differently than what I've traditionally known them to be. So as a result of a combination of those things, we've come up with a topic that we would like to call Spyfall. It's a spy genre thriller as potent as it was in the 60s, the 70s, and even the 80s. Or as Jason Bourne become the swan song of this fantastic genre. I don't think I can overstate my enthusiasm and glee for the spy genre. So my friends, let's talk about it. Give me all you got. the last really good spy film that I saw on the screen was Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, mm-hmm. which is a remake, or at least a film. Did it start out as a film and then the Alec Guinness series?
It's funny you mention it because the 2011 film is one of my favorite movies of all time.
It's fantastic.
To answer your question, it's a remake of the Alec Guinness 1970s BBC era or BBC broadcast series, television series.
Okay, so it was the series.
It was six episodes. I actually just ordered, because it's hard to find in the States, I got the Blu-ray. I'm three episodes in I think it's six episodes total. I'm three episodes in. Mm-hmm. But no, it's based on a book. It's based on this Le Carre book. John Le Carre's, I believe it was 1972 or 73, began the Carla trilogy. So you have Tinker Tailor, then you have Honorable Schoolboy.
Honorable Schoolboy.
And then the third one is Smiley's People. So you have the three books that make up the Carla trilogy. So, mm-hmm. You asking? Oh, the question though. I like that question though. Did Jason Bourne? Is that the swan song? And I have to say, just backing up a little bit for me, what makes the spy genre so interesting to me? And I believe it makes it interesting to a lot of people, even if they don't articulate it this way. Spy genre to me brings together two other genres that we love into a whole, and that's the detective genre,
yeah,
and action genre. So it brings those two things together, because a spy to me is a detective in a certain regard. But also it brings together a political, not always a political, but a more dangerous element and a more action oriented element than some of our typical.
I think this makes it more relatable, more something because they're kind of centered around, even if they're fictionalized, they're centered around events that we have some familiarity.
Well, I think what it does is it brings, and I'm speaking of the best spy genres, stories, whether it be in fiction or on film, it brings to me those two elements together. So it's almost like intellectual action, you know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. you get the intellectualism of a detective, but you also get the action of a thriller, you know, that's more thriller oriented. So what I saw, in my opinion, in the 90s, when did the Jason Bournes came out? In the 2000s, I think the first one was 2001. Mm-hmm. What I saw with the Jason Bourne films was this kind of climax of what Hollywood had been building towards ever since the James Bond movies. James Bond was produced, I believe, was it Eon? Not Eon, but it was British. Since then, all the way up through the 70s, 80s, and 90s, there had been this kind of genre of spy genre where it was definitely more action oriented. So Jason Bourne, especially the second film, involved some elements of that detective. He was, you know, he was detecting things. He was, you know,
to find out his own history.
Yeah, he had to find out his own history, and it involved some intellectualism. It wasn't just all fist flying and, you know, whatever. It wasn't just an action movie. But I'm gonna get to what I think you're about to get to, Jay. To me, what it did though, the action was excellent. Was just over. Just it was beautiful. The action in that movie, the fight choreography, everything in that movie. And so it kind of became almost to me, I agree with the premise almost. Films subsequent to that only looked at the action element of that movie.
Right.
And forgot about the intellectualism, forgot about the tradecraft. The Jason Bourne films, the first two especially, excellent in tradecraft. Mm-hmm. Tradecraft being the term that's used to describe a spy's skill set, you know, that's particular to espionage. So when you see Jason Bourne hunting down the CIA, essentially, he uses a lot of tradecraft in that movie, and it's beautifully played. But the action, I think, in that movie was so brilliant, especially the second one. Paul Greengrass is the director. That subsequent movies only concentrated on that, and although it had a positive, in my opinion, impact on the Bond franchise, I think it had a negative impact on a lot of other films.
I think it's important to rewind a little bit as well and say James Bond wasn't the sole iteration of spy cinema before Bourne. Bourne, in fact, followed the James Bond element of these stories having the weighting towards action rather than towards politics or clandestine deception and intrigue. Bond movies were very, very much like that, in the way that they were action heavy. But there's a huge host of espionage cinema before Bond which wasn't action focused. Stuff like The Third Man, Secret Agent, Foreign Agent. There are so many films from the 40s and 50s which had action moments in them, but they were primarily a game of chess, basically. Which
that intellectual, high-level...
Correct. And, you know, you I think the best of the spy genre that I've experienced, whether it's in fiction, as Isaac was saying, Le Carre or Len Dayton, Robert Ludlum, many of whose books were in fact made into films in the 60s and 70s. If you look at those and all the Cold War stuff, it is very much a game of chess where neither side can see their opponent. And in fact, they can't even see the chessboard. They are imagining what pieces are being moved, and they're thinking, well, if I was there, what piece would I move? And then something happens, an event happens, and half of it is, okay, a piece just got moved, and half of it, well, hang on, is that a piece moved, or is that a decoy? Am I missing another piece being moved? So that kind of real mental chess game, which dominates stuff like Tinker Tailor, Third Man, etc., I think that is largely absent from Bond and Bourne, and then all the sort of would-be Bond-born replicas that we have seen since and we see now again and again and again.
Well, James Bond being the most famous secret agent of them all, I think the
who's really hardly ever secret, but go ahead.
True. and not very intellectual, really.
It's in the books, the arch books, to villain some degree,
manifests the intellectual nature of the story. These big larger than life personalities.
James Bond is more like the guy. Star Wars fans are going to hate me. James Bond is more Star Wars, and I would say, Star Trek has always been more intellectual than Star Wars, but James Bond is Star Wars. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Whereas you know, a George Smiley is more Star Trek. You know, my question though, John, is that was James Bond, because there's a lot of great spy films that followed the initial, you know, the James Bond 60s. There were other films in the 60s, other films in the 70s, other films in the 80s, 90s. But was Bond the beginning of something, like the beginning of the end? It just took the end a long time to get here. Because I think we can all agree that, say, within the last 10 years, we haven't seen, you know, that intellectual spy, the quintessential spy movie doesn't really exist, except for the Le Carre, you know, the Tinker Tailor and A Most Wanted Man.
I was thinking about this question in
cinema, because we can get to this later, but television is a different story. But go ahead.
So I wonder if it's just a general downslide in quality as a whole, and a de-emphasis on the intellectual in movies, rather than for this particular genre, we now no longer want them to be mind game based. We want them to be war game based.
I could see that. So this spy genre as a casualty of a bigger, of another war, basically, or a larger war. I can dig that. I follow that.
Well, I think now too, because war has become less less clear, the objectives are less clear. They're much more abstract, and they're much more, you know, spread out. So, take a movie like Sicario, for example.
Sicario.
God damn it!
Actually, technically, Sicario. So not take even Sicario. Uh-oh. Sicario.
Someone's been dating outside.
Take a movie
it's
like
a global world, Jay.
Take a movie like Sicario, for example, where Clooney's a CIA guy.
Clooney.
You're thinking of you're not thinking of Sicario. You're thinking of what was the movie, Jay? Where Clooney played, he got the famous scene where he got his fingernails.
Siriana.
And Sicario.
Man, that scene. Did you see that?
Sicario is the one with Benicio, yeah, right?
That scene was horrible, hard to watch.
So take a movie like Siriana, for example, where Clooney is a CIA officer who's running a black op. And, you know, these black ops are more like these, you know, black boxes that focus on individuals themselves as self-contained solutions to problems, as opposed to a concept like a world war or even the Cold War, where countries are battling one another. It's like now to be, I guess, more politically correct, don't want to target all Arabs or don't want to target all
Homeland. Okay. I stopped watching Homeland 2 seasons ago. I'm like 2 seasons behind. Jay, I don't know if you I think you're current though.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I it's one of the few programs which has kept me interested. One, actually the only TV program that has kept me interested.
So it's been good, because I stopped, I think, the season after, spoiler alert, I mean, you know, you heard the spoiler alert at the beginning of the show, but in case you didn't hear it, spoiler alert again. I stopped after Brody was killed. And I think the last episode I ever saw was when I was done, was when she, you know, almost drowned her baby in the tub, you know, had thoughts about drowning her kid. I was pretty much done after that. So you're saying it got better.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good. It's, I think that they've had two supernaturally prescient seasons. I mean, this particular season right now, you are like, how the hell did you guys write this a year ago? Because it's like all of this is happening right now. It's frightening how they actually had their finger on the future pulse.
What about the espionage part of it though? Is it living up
to it? Yeah, it's good. And it's not like, you know, it's they to take your I caught the point earlier about, you know, do they demonize one enemy? And they actually don't. You know, they've gone from Arabs to domestic terrorists to forces within the government to Russian interference. You know, they've spanned it. Every season it's different. And I feel that they do show enough of the other side's perspective so that it is not simply cut and dry in the way that, for example, 24 was, which was very much Jason Bourne on TV. In fact, which came first, Bourne as a movie, which came first, Bourne Identity or 24 as a TV show?
I'd have to look, but what's interesting though about what you just said is that, and what's interesting about the Bourne trilogy is that they didn't target Arabs in the Bourne trilogy. It was the CIA they were targeting.
It had a Manchurian candidate ingredient to it.
Yeah, but this was post 9/11. So they could have, you know, the impetus, and I believe, Jay, 24 was 2002, maybe, because I know it was post 9/11.
So Bourne Identity was 2002.
So it's interesting that they didn't in Bourne Supremacy or Bourne Ultimatum, you know, switch up. They kept the whole.
But I mean, to be fair, I suppose part of that will be the Matt Damon Bourne Identity is a remake of a 1988 film, which in itself was an adaptation of a 1980 novel by Robert Ludlum. And so
first episode, you know, of 24, by the way, Jay, was November 6, 2001, so we're talking 2 months after 9/11.
Bauer beat Bourne by so I mean, assuming they kept close to the source material, I guess Arabs weren't the sort of number one enemy in 1980. That would have still been Cold War territory.
True. And I'm trying to find the...
Well, you know, Arthur, before you go on, it's interesting that you mentioned Syriana. I think Syriana is an honorable exception. In the 60s, 70s, and well before, war films and spy films were completely separate entities. You had dudes in the trenches.
Right.
And, you know, fighting tanks and stuff. And then you had guys in alleyways in Macintoshes. And, you know, they were totally different types of film. But I think in the 21st century, these films have actually merged. And spy films and war films have become basically the same film, where, you know, Green Zone, Zero Dark Thirty, all of these very popular war films, they all have a
espionage portion,
espionage element. Right. Even war films like Lone Survivor, where it's just a SEAL team going in and, you know, going in to take out a target, they're still doing a black ops maneuver. You know, it's not like a war film, we're advancing on this hill kind of war film. It's four guys operating on their own paramilitary and, you know, sophisticatedly trying to pinpoint this this one enemy. Stuff like Eye in the Sky, fantastic film from a few years ago, or the Ethan Hawke equivalent of that. What's that Ethan Hawke drone movie? Kill Something, Kill Zone?
Yeah.
That was not a bad movie either, but they all sort of show the changing nature of war, where it's no longer 100 guys in a field trying to, you know, get this bit of land under their control. It's actually, even when it's soldiers in uniform, it's much more tactical in the sort of way a spy movie would sort of be, I suppose. And so, and a lot of these movies, they don't just have the military, they also have a CIA presence or a MI5 presence. Or nowadays, perhaps because the nature of war has changed so much and we are almost not fighting another country, you know, with ISIS and Al Qaeda, etc., we're fighting disembodied units of people with no
ideology,
etc. So, you know, maybe that's, you know, that's a driver for it. Whereas in the 60s and 70s and 80s, the Cold War was the number one sort of newsworthy political issue. And and one might even argue, sorry if I'm going off on one here, but one might even argue that cinema and TV is propaganda, and we saw the films we saw in the 60s and 70s because, you know, authorities wanted us to believe in our values, believe in our way of doing things, depict the other side in a particularly
a clearly defined way. Us versus them. Who's the us and who's the them? Yes. Whereas now, to your point,
that's not even an argument. That's
like
that's
the spy.
That's a fact. But,
yeah.
Well, putting the Cold War aside just for a moment, I'm hearing that the democratization of how information is shared plays a part in this needing to change how the spy genre looks. Because now, to your point, Jahan, the spy has turned into the project manager for the military and is entrenched as into the team. And also, whereas before, there was a quote unquote clear enemy, Russia, Japan, the Axis. You know, now what's the enemy? Well, the enemy is an idea, Islam, Arabs. But then local Arab communities are saying, "Well, wait a minute, they're not with us. We don't believe what they believe, and they're justified in you know being destroyed because they're not adhering to the true tenets of, you know, what our faith is."
The issue, well, first of all, to go back to you guys, what you mentioned a minute ago, propaganda starts with who's telling the story. And so to me, there's a level of propaganda in almost every Hollywood film. Everyone. There was some propaganda in Black Panther. That's right. I said it.
Wait, what?
we can talk about that another time. But there's propaganda in everything. So the problem with the propaganda that happens now, like John said, as far as, you know, you see these movies like Bourne and some of these other movies where the CIA or the Western spies are the bad guys, is that it's always pointed out that it's just these few, these couple bad apples. You know what I'm saying? This guy, this guy, and this guy. Maybe there's five or six of them, but it's just them. It's not the organization. It's just them. And we got Pam Landy. She's good. And she'll get rid of them, and then it's all good. You know, so it, you always got to go back to who's telling the story. And if it's coming from a Western point of view, I've never, I can't, I'm trying hard to think of a film or a show where, and I'm sure it's the same in other countries. They're, you know, when they tell the story, it's going to be, they're the good guys, other guys are the bad guys, even when they're the bad guys. So it, propaganda to me starts with the story. The question I have for you guys, or who's telling the story, the question I have for you guys, though, is that to go along with Johan's point about the convergence of the military side and the espionage side, my favorite James Bond movie at this time, at this moment, you know, it changes depending upon what day you ask me, but today it's From Russia With Love. And one of the things I love about that movie, and I think to the credit of the James Bond films, they did this a lot, to varying degrees of success, is it directly showed you what level of, what impact good intelligence has on military action. And so I was going to ask you, Jay, do you like The Hunt for Red October? You know, do you like that? Where do you rate that movie? Do you rate that movie, as you would say?
Yeah, I think it's a great spy film.
And
yeah.
I think if I'm remembering that movie correctly, again, that was, it showed you what weight intelligence can have on a military maneuver or military action. And I think that at its best, that convergence that Jay is talking about in the 90s or maybe into the 2000s, I like that. You know, I like that where it shows you, you know, that connection, you know, where it's not separate. It's not just a bunch of shadowy stuff happening that has no impact on, because, you know, John Le Carre has famously said, you know, or talked about how, and other spies have talked about it as well, as far as how little use espionage can be, you know, how little of use it can be, meaning in the grand scheme of things, how it's just a bunch of guys really just, you know, trading secrets and, you know, some of it is, it amounts to bullshit, basically. And it's like sometimes it amounts to a waste of time, many times. So these movies that kind of show us that connection, I think for the audience, it becomes a part of the thrill to see, okay, what Alec Baldwin's character is doing here in this little scene is going to affect whether or not these missiles get fired. And that's a connection, I think, from a storytelling, from a narrative standpoint, is very interesting.
And that's a good film with good performances, and it has a very good, it's got a solid plot, a beginning, a middle, and an end. Espionage is about complexity. It is about deception. So I kind of find it hard to be interested in a spy film that really is just an action film.
Right.
Masquerading as a spy. But, you know, you take something like, I just want to mention this for anybody who out there who hasn't seen it, 1935, The 39 Steps. It's so many twists and turns, so many unexpected, didn't see that coming, moments. And it's that to me is what a spy film should
be.
Let me ask you though, just to break this down, how many people do you know play chess?
Including,
but how many people do you know who are spies? Present company.
No. I'm saying though, this is why I think if we could create a chart that showed the popularity of chess in relation to the popularity of the traditional espionage film, I'm pretty sure that down curve would probably be very similar.
Right.
That complexity, to Jay's original point, has left mainstream cinema in mass.
I agree. And that's kind
of now where it goes. Where it goes, though, is gone to television. You can find great traditional espionage on TV.
Okay, and what is it centered around? Is it centered around a period piece?
It's centered around the Cold War. Cold War. Now, not all of it. You had like Jay mentioned, Homeland. Then you got Honorable Woman, which, you know,
I thought Honorable
Woman was very good. I didn't think it was. I had a couple issues with it, but I thought it was very, very good. But then you have Deutschland 83. Came out, I think, 2 years ago.
Does 83 refer to 1983? Yeah, there you go.
Told from the East German point of view, though. Somewhat East German, West German, East German. But told
from your favorite as well.
Oh, the Americans. Yeah, and I'm a season behind on the Americans, which I regret because I would love to go in depth about what's going on right now. I'm sure it's great. But the Americans told from a Russian point of view. But again, during the Cold War, the 80s. And to me, that's that level of complexity, not just to Jay's earlier point, not just within the spy genre, but just complexity in storytelling in general has gone to television. It's interesting how the spy genre was kind of, there's some diversity in the spy genre back in the day, because I looked up, you know, the greatest spy movies, some list of all time, and Charade comes up. And Charade is one, I love Charade. Audrey Hepburn, why his name just leave my mind? Come on, Jay, you're supposed to step in when I mess up like that.
Cary Grant, no?
Cary Grant, and Audrey Hepburn, and Walter Matthau. Love that movie. It's sometimes, I think even on Netflix, it's listed as a comedy, because it is funny, but it's not ha-ha, laugh out loud through the whole thing funny. It's an espionage flick. So there was some diversity back then. Now, when I look at the, you know, list of like, oh, the best espionage movies that have come out in the last 10 years, and Kingsman is on there.
Oh, my God.
Ugh, I'm like, that's not an espionage flick. Yeah. But it is. You know, now, by today's standards, that's a spy movie. And to me, it's a straight-out action movie.
Yeah, it's a spy movie with no spying. They're just getting into one long, fight after another.
Right now, the standard is, as long as you say you're a spy in the movie, and you use any type of gadget, you know, you're a spy. I think that, again, I'm not, you know, there's some action-oriented, quote-unquote, spy movies that have come out that I love, that I really have a good time with. You know, so I like, John's going to scream at me because he did it when I first mentioned this. I really liked Man from U.N.C.L.E., the recent one, the remake. I liked it. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I like that movie so much, but I like it.
No, people did... A few people have told me they enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's like, it's more of an action flick than a spy, but there's just something, I guess it's maybe the retro. It just feels, I just like it, you know? So I have enjoyed some of the movies. But there's this line that I think you can't cross. If you say that you're an espionage flick, if you say you're a spy movie, there has to be a certain amount of thinking. And like, my biggest issue with Skyfall, which I enjoyed, but my biggest issue with Skyfall is that his move at the end of that movie to take M to his, you know, back to Skyfall, the place where he grew up, was completely nonsensical. Made no sense. It actually allowed old boy to win. You know what I'm saying? What's his name? Silva. Because basically what you did was you took M out of the security of London, and where she had, like, you know, actual, you know, security with her, isolated her, brought Silva to you with no backup.
Yeah.
And then Silva was able to basically, you know, disseminate your, go through you and then kill her, and yeah, you got him at the end, but he accomplished. That's not espionage. There's no thinking there.
Well, that's just like Mission Impossible.
That type of movie does not get labeled as a spy flick, even in the 1960s Bond movies.
Right.
Sean Connery is not making that mistake. You know what I'm saying? That's my point. That's my thing with the spy movies of old, is that there was a certain, even in the action-oriented spy Bond movies, there was a level of espionage thinking that you had to have in order to label. Now all you have to do is say you're a spy.
But I think,
and
that's,
I don't care what the hell else happens in the movie.
I think part and parcel, that's the modern abstraction of what the enemy is. And also, quite frankly, our inability to be able to keep secrets. I mean, the whole premise of the spy culture, the intelligence culture, is to actually
keep secrets
and hold on to secrets.
And meanwhile, everybody knows who James Bond is.
Well, yeah. Well,
and
I
not
mean,
to, you know, not to pick on, because like I said, I think that From Russia Love is a great spy flick, great espionage flick. So not to pick on Bond or Ian Fleming, how much of this is the fault of the Americans? Because
the TV show or the people?
No, people. The culture. Because let's be honest, there's been some great American spy thrillers and spy, both novelizations and cinema. But how much of this is, because really, if you know spy movies, the nature of espionage is that there's no real conclusion. You know, there's no, we won.
It's an ongoing.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
These cats are not looking to arrest people. You know what I'm saying? If they catch you, they're looking to flip you and use you to get something else. So there's no real final act in a good spy film. Western culture in general, not just America, but we love a ending, a finalization I don't want to have to think about this again. I want to know what happened. So, Jay, how much of this is our fault?
I wish I could say that in England, our multiplexes play art and repertory films all day and, you know, Infinity War goes straight to DVD, but that's not the case. We have...
Hush your mouth.
We you know, people here are as stupid as everywhere else. And I don't say that cruelly, I mean as underexposed. No, I'm just saying underexposed to... You know, look, there's no... You can argue all you want. Anybody who's pissed off at what I just said, you can argue all you want, but name me 20 films you've seen before the year 1970 and we'll find out how exposed you are. And look, you may not be interested in it, that's fine, but fundamentally it means that you're underexposed to a different style of filmmaking and you're overexposed to, you know, the current style of filmmaking, which is very much popcorn and big budget and special effects heavy and, you know, resolution driven. I don't think it's the fault of Americans. I don't think that, you know, British creativity or American creativity for that matter is hampered specifically by one region or one audience. I think altogether all audiences have started to lose, you know, the sophistication. And I would say the bigger reason perhaps is what talent is drawn to these type of movies. If you... Alfred Hitchcock, he made like, I don't know, 7 espionage films. I mean, which ones? He made...
39 Steps.
39 Steps, Man Who Knew Too Much, North by Northwest. You know, Cary Grant's not a spy, but he's confused for a spy. And then bad spies try to kill him and he's just an innocent guy. Kind of sort of like 3 Days at the Condor.
Like Enemy of the State, Will Smith's Enemy of the State.
Yeah, exactly.
Good spy flick.
You have those three, then you also have Sabotage, you have Saboteur, you have The Lady Vanishes, you have Secret Agent, you have Notorious. Like, what is that, 7 or 8 spy films by one incredible masterpiece director? Are we having nowadays directors of that caliber, like let's say Alfonso Cuarón or someone, or Iñárritu? Are they making films in this genre? It seems to be of limited interest. It seems to be of paramount interest to a lot of these heavy hitters back then.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually seems to have dwindled in interest. And even strong, formerly strong directors like, say, Ridley Scott, they seem to have made exactly the same type of movies everybody else is making nowadays.
Was Inception a spy flick? Did it have elements of a spy flick?
I'd say it was a sort of heist movie more than a spy flick.
Wasn't it essentially espionage?
Corporate espionage.
Corporate espionage, yeah, okay. Yeah. I mean, I'd put it in the heist category, but I get what you're saying.
You know, how do you guys feel about the last few Mission Impossible flicks? No. Arthur, I know, I think you saw Rogue Nation with me.
Yeah. So you asked me my impression. I like the Brian De Palma version first. The first one that happened in 95 or 96. I think now they've become about Ethan Hawke in a different way than the Bourne movies are about Jason Bourne. You know.
Do you feel that? Are you saying that as a positive or a negative?
I say that as a negative. Because Hawk, he really has no resolution. It's like it's almost like, you know, sticking it to the man. You know what I'm saying?
But see, guys, this is where, you know what? This is what the definition perhaps of spy film has changed. So, from what I saw of Ghost Protocol. And all the Bond movies now, it seems that spy films are about escapism, high-tech, you know, technology, and then far-flung exotic locations.
Agreed.
That's the core element of now a spy film. We've got to have this.
Agreed. But if you're going to do that, if you're going to go that route, I feel that the last two Mission Impossible films, especially Rogue Nation, if you're going to go that route, that's the best of it. That movie, to me, Rogue Nation, mm-hmm. flashy, I mean, just prototypical, you know, big budget Hollywood flick.
Dudes hanging off of cliffs.
Hanging off cliffs, yeah. Hanging off airplanes. Mm-hmm. Crazy. Completely unrealistic. Mm-hmm. But there is tradecraft. There's an element of espionage in there. At least he's doing some spy stuff. You know what I'm saying? It's like, if you're going to do...
You're talking about crafts.
Yeah. If you're going to do, like John said, if you're going to basically, you know, check those boxes that John just listed off, do it in a way that's as well crafted as the Impossible films. Mm-hmm. But it does remind you of, okay, this is what's wrong with the genre in 2018. Mm-hmm. So how do we get back to that? Again, like I said, I keep seeing it on television. I just don't understand why cinema can't do what television is doing right now. And the only time they seem to be able to do it is when they're adapting a Le Carre book. You can't underestimate, let's be real, you can't really underestimate the impact that Le Carre had on spy genre in fiction and in film. To John's point, there were great spy movies before Le Carre, but in terms of the Cold War, when Spy Who Comes In From the Cold comes out in 61, and then the movie came out, I think, not too long after that, it was a sea change, a big shift, because this was the anti-Bond. You know, this was the complete opposite of these Bond movies. And so that impact is interesting to me now that in film and cinema, Le Carre's impact is the antithesis of all these other movies. Then, sadly, though, when they brought him to television in John's favorite television show of the last few years, The Night Manager, a completely Americanized adaptation of a Le Carre book, which they made into like an 8-part television show, which did phenomenally well. But I do agree with John. It is too standardized. The level of complexity kind of leaves it, which is sad. But there are some, you know, Jay, look, there are still some great moments in that television series, most notably with, I forgot the actress's name. She plays the MI6 officer.
Oh, she was good. Yeah,
she's phenomenal.
Yeah.
She's in Broadchurch. I forgot her name, but she's the lead in Broadchurch. So there are still some notable things in there, but it's interesting that contrast.
There's an abundance of literature that they can draw from here. They're not just limited to John le Carre. If they can't think up an original idea themselves, and they want to adapt a novel, there's, you know, Graham Greene, there's Eric Ambler, there's W. Somerset Maugham. You know, these guys, heavyweight cats, every bit as equal as John le Carre in sophisticated writing, right? You would agree, no?
Yeah, I was just shaking my head because as far as my preferences, but yeah, as far as sophistication, you're correct.
I mean, you know, as far as, you know, sure.
Literature, it's literature, yeah. But the point, though, I guess what I'm wondering is that why can't we see original, because we're seeing some original stuff on television. Why isn't that coming to cinema? And maybe it is, to your point, maybe the heavyweights aren't looking at it like that.
I think that is definitely part of it.
Okay, the TV show, and it was television, Alias. 5 seasons, kind of went off the rails season 4. But J.J. Abrams' Alias worked for me. The story about Sydney Bristow, who was the daughter of whom she thought was a CIA operative, but in reality was an operative for a rogue CIA.
It's the basic plot of a lot of these things now. You thought you were working for this person. You're actually working for this rogue organization within this organization. To bring up the Marvel, the MCU, it was Hydra. You know,
Sure. But it worked really well in a modern context, because you didn't see a woman, particularly a young woman, be in this kind of role. It had just amount of action to it.
Mm. Well, they tried it with Salt. Angelina Jolie's Salt. Did you see that?
I didn't see that.
Yeah, they tried it with Salt. Salt was basically that, except she was, spoiler alert to you, but she was basically a Russian. She was a double agent.
Wasn't she the robot? Who's the robot?
I have no idea what you're talking about. One of the biggest problems that we have now and, you know, to me, Alias may not fit in this category, but a lot of these things do, is that they're confusing the assassins with the spies. And you remember Jahan in the Lucari books, in the Smiley books, the circus had a division called the Scalp Hunters, and they were the basically the assassins, or the, you know, the cast that would just do the dirty shit.
The Double O guys.
The Double O guys, essentially. So what we have now is, like, we don't have any George Smileys. We just got all these assassins. And it's like, I dig the assassins. I want to see their stories too. But can we get, you know, the cats, the other cats who really have to stay up all night reading through.
The project managers.
Reading through paperwork. And the detectives.
Gathering information.
Give me the detectives. That's all. I want the detectives. If you take Jessica Jones season one and make it throw a political element in there, that's a spy thriller, because she's a detective doing this. All she needs is a political, and she'd be an espionage. It would be a spy movie.
But the thing is that even, you know, in the modern context, the stories are there. There's the murder of Kim Jong-un's brother that happened.
Yeah, I mean, right now you also have the murder of Jamal Khashoggi. You also have the arrest and detention of British academics Matthew Hedges by the UAE, and for much longer, Nazneen Zakari Ratcliffe by Iran on accusations of spying. So there's a lot of stuff, like, in current affairs to draw from in real life.
Recently in London, there was the death of the Russian agent. They don't have to be biopics or reenactments of these very specific events, but, you know, this clandestine activity is still happening.
I think that also part of the what we're going through right now is that you give the public something that it can relate to and they can understand. When the spy who came out from the cold came out, the Berlin Wall just went up. You know what I'm saying? America, the Western world, was transfixed on this new Cold War. And so when that book came out, it was so of the moment. You know what I'm saying? Not only did it show you a completely different side of the whole, you know, so anti, you know, it was the anti James Bond, but it also was very much of the moment. I don't know if people today, because there's so many distractions now, are as politically engaged as they were in the 60s. I'm not gonna say I don't know. They aren't.
Well, I think there is a great deal of political engagement.
They're politically engaged
domestically.
Yeah, domestically, but they're politically engaged in I hate Donald Trump. They're politically engaged in Me Too. They're politically engaged in hashtags. You know what I'm saying? Not to demean any of those things, but they're politically engaged in that way. I don't think that, because, you know, we grew up in the 80s. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, you know, it was a very nerve-wracking time, because the propaganda that was being fed to us was that we could all die at any moment.
And that's, you know, really what it is. It wasn't so much that we were transfixed on the Cold War. We were transfixed on Doomsday.
Right.
And not to one-up you guys, but also, you know, growing up in England at that time, you lived through the threat of being blown up every day with the IRA, etc. So
there was that sense of urgency, you know what I'm saying? And that's, I think, connected us to these stories a little bit. Right now, I think that we're so far, these wars are being fought so far away from home in America. I'm speaking about strictly America, even though not, you know, 9/11 was as recent as 18 years ago. But still, I think there's not the same level of connection. And so these stories, I just don't feel they have the urgency, or they have the present urgency that they need to connect with people the way that those older films and older novels did.
Yeah, absolutely. Wait a minute, let me pull my notes up. What if the Cold War never happened? How would that have affected the spy genre? Would there even have been a genre?
Well, there was a genre before then, but would there be because if you look at the number of films, fiction and films that are steeped in the Cold War, you're wiping out probably 80% of what we've seen over the last, 50 years?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yes, absolutely, you're right. Because before the Cold War, if we're going to say, when did the Cold War start?
Like, some people say immediately after the end of World War II.
Okay, well, then
So you're talking 1945, 46.
You lose, like, what? You lose Mata Hari, British agent, both versions of The Man Who Knew Too Much, both versions of 39 Steps, Secret Agent, Lady Vanishes, what else? Night Train to Munich.
Tyra Bond catalog.
I even think you lose... you
up
lose
until
movies.
The 80s.
No, as in, sorry. You that's all you have. The ones I mentioned are all you have left.
Oh, okay.
Okay, I get it. Yeah.
You lose everything else.
I would even think that you'd lose a movie like Eye of the Needle that happened in 1981.
Brilliant movie, mate. Brilliant movie.
Because even if we're not talking about movies that are directly connected to the Cold War,
right?
A lot of these movies built off of that. You figure
anything that had to do with World War II was the context of behind enemy lines. You know, we've got a guy on the inside and building intelligence that way. It wasn't considered espionage.
Mm-hmm. Well, hold on. MI6 existed prior to World War II. Now, CIA, which was formed out of the OSS, World War II's OSS, and then became the CIA. My question is, if there's no Cold War, does the CIA get created? And I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Or does it just stay OSS? I don't know. And if not, we've just got MI6 stories. And who are the Brits? And again, MI6 stories, a lot of that was class, you know, based on a class system almost within Britain. But those stories, I kind of would be interested to see what those stories, what the Le Carres and those other British writers, what they would end up writing about.
Because
assuming that Graham Greene and Ian Fleming and Le Carre and the rest of them, those three I know actually had either served within the espionage or had connections to the service, to the intelligence services.
Yeah.
If they'd still maintain those, that life path and still, you know, join the intelligence services and they ended up still writing about espionage books, what are those books about?
Well,
Le Carre himself.
They center around war in some kind of way.
You know what they would have been writing about? Probably a lot of writers post-World War II would have been writing about espionage during World War II.
Yeah, I think so. Like French resistance and stuff like that.
So then what you have is a bunch of writers writing about the past. And if we saw what happened in the 60s, again, beginning with Spy Who Came In From the Cold, you had that resonance of, you know, it becomes a bestseller because people are connecting to it because it's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So if they're writing about the past, you don't get that. And so then does that mean that the spy genre becomes like the detective genre? No, not even that, because the detective genre, you can write about the now too. Does it become a historical, or what does it become?
The question perhaps assumes that in the vacuum of peace, humanity wouldn't have found another way to screw it up and there'd be another conflict or another...
Don't say humanity, dude. Be specific. Don't put it on all humans. Let's be specific.
But yeah,
they know who they are.
A story like The Boys from Brazil, you consider that an espionage novel?
Explain that. I mean,
so The Boys from Brazil, the premise is that Joseph Mengele, Hitler's, I don't know what his position was in the Third Reich, but you know, Hitler's main scientist, moves to Brazil. He escapes Germany. Moves to Brazil and begins a program to clone humans, and he clones Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at it, you know, that the Nazi hunters are spies, then absolutely. I mean, it is.
Because that's outside the context of the Cold War.
Yeah.
Even Marathon Man has some elements.
I was about to say, Boys from Brazil is a spy flick, then Marathon Man is as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's break this down, though, because let's be honest about one of the things that was, you know, made espionage fiction and cinema accessible for writers during the Cold War. You could dream of a lot of these stories because the accessibility of, say, the British agents or the American agents being clandestine throughout Europe,
and even
to some degree in behind the Iron Curtain, but really throughout Europe, there was all these different possibilities because the white man could be anything. He could be German. He could be French. He could be British, he could do all these different things. Mm-hmm. Jason Bourne at the time, you know, when he discovered who he was living as a Frenchman, you know, in France, or an American living in France or whatever. There's all that blending in that can happen that's necessary for covertness. the war, the current, the forever war, as they're calling it now, which we're in now, mm-hmm. in the Middle East, there's a limited amount of accessibility for the traditional espionage agencies. You know what I'm saying? Right. They're depending upon a lot of people in these places.
Wouldn't that be interesting if that's what's holding up Hollywood, because now you got to cast people of color in starring right. roles?
Right. So there's that. And in Homeland, what they've done is that they've, you know, okay, we're going to do it from the CIA's point of view. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's always going to be through our point. We don't have those, you know, that that level of accessibility where I can just dream up any kind of story I want, because I'm playing in this European playground. Mm-hmm. Now my playground is extended to the to Turkey, to the Middle East, to the North African, you know, theater. You know, it's like there's all these. We haven't even brought up Asia. You know what I'm saying? Right. We haven't brought up China. You know, the intelligence agencies, they're depending upon Chinese information. You know, mm-hmm. they're running agents in China, but they're Chinese agents. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not sending their, you know, Americans aren't hanging out over there, you know, to a certain degree, unless they're, you know, at the embassy or something like that. You know, that's their cover. But you get my point, though, is that there is a limit from a writing standpoint. Once that Cold War, you know, ended, and once, not even once the Cold War ended, once the Forever War started and that became the main conflict, then we are dealing with where does espionage fit in that? Homeland has found something, like to your point earlier, 24 just went complete conservative Republican with it.
Right.
You know, Homeland has gone kind of conservative leftist with it sometimes, depending upon what, I guess, what season or what episode. And then the Americans, my favorite show, they said fuck it and just said we're just gonna go back to the 80s.
But then, okay, here's a question for you guys: do espionage films need to be grounded in reality? Do they need to be grounded in historical fact for us as an audience to buy into them, or is Rogue One an espionage film?
No, and that's no to Rogue One. No to your question: do they need to be grounded in fact? Yes to the fact that Rogue One is an espionage film, it has espionage elements in it. And I agree with the point that you're insinuating, is that to me right now in 2018, things like sci-fi espionage and corporate espionage, you're bound to me, you're probably going, if you want to talk about, you know, contemporary stuff, mm-hmm. you're probably going to get, unless you're going to do historical espionage, your safest bet is probably going to be sci-fi corporate espionage. That's why Rogue One, Inception, mm-hmm. Duplicity, those type of movies to me are good, you know what I'm saying? Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, something like even like Rogue Nation, which I like, there's espionage in there and I think it's well done. But at the end of the day, that's leaning way more towards an action movie than an espionage flick.
Before we round this up, Isaac, do detective films get made today?
No, not like they used to. So I'm trying to think of the last great detective movie I saw. In the theater.
So I think that kind of proves my point, right, bro? Both of them depend on storyline, complexity, sometimes a labyrinthine plot and twists and turns. And if modern audiences aren't really interested in that anymore, it kind of explains why both the genres, we don't get examples of those genres anymore.
I agree, because a lot of the great detective movies, you don't really get a burst of, you get hints of, you know, you get action here and there, but really you don't get that burst of action until the climax.
Yeah.
I think could
Chinatown get made in 2018?
Could it get made? Yeah. Would it be a mainstream big Hollywood movie? No. Mm-hmm. No. I would it have a star of Jack Nicholson's caliber?
No.
But I think that I dug was a movie with Daniel Craig that just came out about 4 or 5 years ago, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. I thought that was a really good detective movie.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it was kind of, you know, that fourth act was wild, but I dug it. Seven came out in 1995, you know, a long time ago. It was a great detective movie. Gone Baby Gone. Mm-hmm. But yeah, as far as like recently, no. So I think your point is legit. Yeah, I love the opening of that movie when what's the actor's name who played the old man in Dragon Tattoo?
Christopher Plummer.
Oh man, when he's phenomenal throughout that whole movie. He's phenomenal at everything, but I love when he opens, you know, takes and looks at that painting and just calls old boy and is like, "Yeah, I got another one." Yeah. And you're like, great detective movie opening, because you're like, got another what? You know, it's like, what happened? You know, and it's like, you know, you're engaged from the moment
Have you seen the Swedish one?
No. Yeah. Everybody tells me I need to see that. Is it better though? Is it better?
No. Okay. No. Not in my opinion. Arthur?
I concur, it's not better.
I appreciate the spy genre stuff that makes us question, and again, I guess this is why the Licaria stuff resonates so well, that makes us question, it doesn't force to shove the propaganda down our throats, mm-hmm. you know, and that's, I think with Tinker Tailor and some of the other ones, it shows you that, you know, especially with Smiley and Carla and Gary Oldman's brilliant monologue mm-hmm. Halfway through Tinker Tailor, and he's just looking at the camera talking about Carla. It really shows you the same size of, you know, different sides of the same coin aspect. I'm halfway through the television adaptation, the Alec Guinness version, mm-hmm. and I can say that I would not compare it to the movie because it's just so completely different mm-hmm. in scope, you know what I'm saying, in genre and mm-hmm. everything. But I can say the one element I like about Gary Oldman's performance is that he brings out the melancholy of Smiley mm-hmm. in a way that Alec Guinness, at least in the first three episodes I saw, doesn't. Mm. The melancholy in the book of George Smiley is really his inner thoughts. And you can really see that through his thinking about his place in the world right now and his place, his dealings with Anne, his wife, his estranged wife. Gary Oldman does that in the movie without really, because you remember the movie, he doesn't even say a line until like, I think 20 minutes, like 15 mm. minutes into the movie or whatever. There's just a melancholy about him that I feel I connect to a little bit differently than with the Alec Guinness portrayal.
Yeah, I mean, I think one great thing about the Licaria stuff is they don't love their jobs.
Yeah.
Like Jack Bauer, even Bourne, you know, they're sort of passionate about, and you know, Spy Game, all these things. These guys love their jobs. They're passionate about what they do. They believe in it. They want to save lives. They believe in the values of their nation. Whereas with Licaria stuff, it's like, Christ, got to go to work again.
Well, yeah, well, that's that personal cost.
And it's also kind of like, they never really seem to give a monkeys about the values of their country. They just want to beat the other guy.
Yeah, they want to win. I mean, I think that the end of the Tinker Tailor, the book, the movie, the TV show, whatever, the confrontation between Smiley and, I guess I shouldn't, even if this, you know, we're doing spoilers, but I won't ruin it. The confrontation between Smiley and the mole, once he finds out who the mole is, mm-hmm. he does kind of confront him about, you know, because the mole basically admits that he aligned himself with the East. You know, he felt that things in the West were not what they should be, and he aligned himself with the East. And Smiley, to some degree, can't agree with that. And I think that's, I get your point, Jay, and I agree with you completely. But I think that that's where you see an element of, I'm going to pick a side, you know, and Smiley definitely picked a side. But I think what Licaria did was just showed you how within the circus / the MI6, mm-hmm. it's like any other corporate atmosphere. It's like any other office. You got all these inner office politics. You got the banality of it. Mm-hmm. You got the...
And in fact, beautifully done and laid out in The Spy Who Came In From the Cold when Limas is being interrogated by Fiedler and they suspect him of being a double agent. So he's giving up all the goods about the British Secret Service. And it's the most boring debrief in history.
Yeah, and it's like, this file is marked this. Well, why is it marked
exactly.
that?
Exactly.
Well, yeah, because this person can see it, and they should have marked it. It has a green tab on it. Yeah, it's like, this is some really corporate, boring shit. And, you know, it's like, you know, that to me, that made it very relatable to anybody who's been in that atmosphere. And it's like, oh, these dudes are living the same type of life, except the stakes are higher. And even what was, you know, what was jarring to me about it is that within the Bond and the Bournes and all those other ones, death and killing and all that stuff really seems to be part and parcel. Limas in that book, if you remember, he says to I think he says to Fiedler or somebody else, he's like a munt. He's like, he's an asshole. The guy did this, did that. He got hold of one of Peter Gwilym's agents and almost killed him. Mm-hmm. The other guy says, well, you know, espionage is not a cricket. You know, it's like the shit is dangerous. Right. Mm-hmm. But the fact mm-hmm. that Limas was just outraged that this other agent, this other like his enemy mm-hmm. almost killed one of his dudes. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, it's not that Bourne Bond type thing where people are just getting killed left and right. It's like real human. It made it much more tangible for me, his outrage. Like, this motherfucker, he got hold of one of these dudes, and instead of just, you know, holding them or trading them for one of our guys, he almost killed him. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, how
the
dare
honor,
he?
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't that serious. Uh-huh. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like, okay, all right.
And even the ending, he feels almost like a pang of, okay, well, it's not going to be great for him now.
Right. That book, anybody who's interested in any type of espionage, read the book, see the movie, read the book first.
Definitely read the book first. Always read the book first.
This has been Snobs on Film. I want to thank you for listening in for this episode. I have been joined by Isaac Perry, who can be found online at...
at Isaac Perry on IG or as kids say, on the gram, or Twitter, or out in the cold.
My man, Jahan, first of his name, don't look where you from!
You can find me at Jahan's Dream on Twitter. You can also find me at Total Music Snobs on Twitter. If you say something that will make me say some wild stuff, you can also find me at Snobs on Film on Twitter. So, you know, bait me and I'll rise to it. And if I'm not on Twitter,
famous
you
last
can
words.
Find me sitting on the 39th step.
And I'm your host. My name is Arthur. My Twitter handle is ARRTHUR. And I'm also lurking about on Total Music Snobs. Full Lid, we'll see you next show.
Don't bait me on Twitter or Instagram. Please. I'm not John. No baiting. Thank you.
Moving on.
Literally no idea what you're talking about.
Did you guys see, I haven't seen it, and I kind of just assumed it would be a bit apple pie, but did you see Bridge of Spies?
No, I haven't seen Bridge of Spies. I keep hearing how boring it is, but that makes me think that maybe it's good.
Maybe it's for us, right?
Because everybody keeps saying it was so boring, so that makes me think there wasn't a lot of action, there was a lot of chess, and I probably would like it.